All right, what's happening, Hal?
Well, the reason I didn't get back with you on that is because I do I've got a double glitch in the title. I think it'll close. In fact, I talked to my attorney. Well, what happened was this guy filed bankruptcy.
Okay.
8-9 years ago on this house.
Yeah.
And it had a first on it of $250,000. No, okay. $205,000, I think. And it had a second of $50,000. Well, the first mortgage, they got rid of the loan. And I was so surprised at that because back in the day when I was doing it, nobody ever got rid of loans like on the first.
Right.
They would just take the house back. But my attorney said, no, they've been doing a lot of that down in Georgia lately. If they think the house is a dump, you know, they just write it off. But the second should have dropped off in the bankruptcy, which was 9 years ago.
Right.
And he doesn't have the papers anymore. At any rate, I went over and talked to the attorney this afternoon, and the company might have gone out of business. We don't know. She said she'll get it taken care of, but I got to get another paperwork signed from the guy, and I got to go, and tomorrow I got a meeting with him in the morning to give us some more information and sign an extension. He wants to sell it. And I even told him about the sewer bill came up at $5,900, and I told him that's going to have to come out of his monies, and he's okay with that.
Yep.
The other thing is they screwed up when they sold him the house. They bought it from, it looks like, from some investors, and they never gave him a clear deed to the property, but he got a mortgage on the property. So somebody screwed up in the title work.
Did he buy it without going through a title company or attorney?
No, he went through a title company. The same people that did the deal for the investor did it for him. So it was a two transaction deal, but they're out of business now. But my attorney said she can handle it. She said, Hal, I'll get it done. She does a lot of this kind of work. And she said, I absolutely will get it done for you, but it's going to take a few days. And
do you close with title companies down there or attorneys?
Well, it's actually with the attorney. Yeah. Yeah. You have to close with an attorney in Georgia.
So that's basically your title gal.
Same person. Well, she farms it out, but, that's the way it works. And, so then I also just so you, I may as well give you my report real quick. And, I also hired another guy today for salesperson. And
nice.
my gal is not working out. When I hired her, I said it's straight commission. She's got a big nut to cover every month. I said, are you going to be able to live for a couple months without any income in case it happens? And of course, she got this deal in the first few days, and we would have closed it within the first 2.5-3 weeks, I think. But she's hasn't been calling lately. And by the way, and I need to call in and find out that report on the FreedomSoft. It doesn't show anything on her, even when she does make a call. Does it have to have a certain amount?
No. If she's calling through a FreedomSoft number, it ought to register.
Oh, wait a minute. Okay, so we got to have...
You got to have a FreedomSoft phone number internal to the system or else you can't track it.
Okay. So how do I get that anyway?
Just go to your name at the very, very top of the page when you're logged in.
Uh-huh.
And then hover over it and click on Settings. And then once you're on the settings page, click My Numbers on the left-hand side, and you'll click the blue number to add number. And then you put in your area code there in Atlanta, and it'll show you numbers that are available, and you just find one you like and click Buy.
What do they cost, do you know?
$395 per month per number, and then usage. And then when you go to the My Numbers page, there's a little pricing link in there in the upper right corner, and it'll show you.
You think it's important we have one of those numbers?
Not mandatory. You can do it either way. Rob has his team call through FreedomSoft. If somebody's calling from a local number, that's better than an outside number. So whatever you come up with you and your team. If they're on the phone, at the end of the day, if they're using a FreedomSoft number, Google Voice number, their own cell phone, what matters is that they're putting in some time.
Okay.
That's what matters.
Well,
yep.
This, I know what you said hour-wise, and I'm probably doing this a little wrong, but the guy that I'm hiring, I had lunch with him today. He took the test. He's got a background. He actually does commercial mortgages. And he's got a background. He's rehabbed houses. He's had rentals. He's from the Bahamas.
Nice. He'll be able to speak the language.
Yeah. And I think he's going to be great. And he said, you know, he can live. I said, can you live for a month or two? You know, because there are no guarantees on these deals. I said, you call enough numbers and we'll have some deals. But I said, you know, you never know when they're going to close. He's aware of that. He's done a lot of mortgages. He's got a background in mortgages like I did, so he understands. That's why I really like the guy. And he's guaranteed that he'll give me at least 3 hours a day, and I think to start with that's going to be fine because he can call an hour or so in the afternoon. And once we're having a lot of trouble getting a hold of anybody. You're always going to have trouble getting a hold of people in the afternoon. There's a certain amount of people that might be home. The rest of them are going to be probably, I'm guessing, and maybe I'm not listening to you guys enough, but I always thought between 5:30 and 7:30 are your prime times to call.
I think so. And there isn't a, you know, get on the phone and, you know, they're eventually going to talk to somebody or leave messages and somebody's going to call back or whatever the case. But, yeah, I like that. I kind of like that early evening, late afternoon time frame.
Well, you know, what I did back when I did foreclosures only back in the 90s and before the crash, I got to where I only worked, I worked 5:30 to 7:30, 3 days a week. And I always bought a couple of houses a month and I always made around 20 grand. So it was, you know, it was a pretty easy deal, but that's when you catch people at home. And of course I was going out to their house and call on, you know, because it was foreclosures.
Gotcha.
But
a lot more leverage with phone because of the time.
Yeah,
you know,
there is.
The weather, too, this doesn't affect everybody, but if you're working a colder market, people are about to be indoors a lot more here in the next 30 to 60 days. So,
out in your area, I heard about all the
snow. Good time of year to be on the phone.
It's hot down here.
Everybody's in flip-flops because it was like 82 today.
Isn't that crazy? I know. I had friends call me the other day.
You know Denver.
Yeah. It's crazy. Hey, I got one more question. I'll get off, and that's about the software itself. And have you ever heard of the ACT database? I know I hear guys talking about different databases. I've had ACT.
I think so, but I don't know anything about it.
Okay, well, that's fine. I've had it for years. And the great thing I liked about it is so easy to do anything you want. And over the weekend, I went ahead and I put all the information that the salesperson is going to get. The only drawback that I've got to FreedomSoft, and I like FreedomSoft, is how you follow up on the calls. Because in ACT, when you follow up, and in a lot of databases, with ACT, it's got the note section, but then you can say, okay, I want to call them back. Let's say you call them in the afternoon. I want to call them back at 7 o'clock. You put that in there, and it automatically comes up on the screen at that time. And it's just better that way.
Yep. Send that. But I'm like, we love getting feedback on it. So that's basically, I mean, the guys could create just a little auto task reminder that would pop up, or like a call up reminder. Sounds pretty simple to do.
Is it possible in there?
Anything's possible.
Your guys could. In fact, that's about the only thing I see. Personally, and I hear these other guys talking about, you know, hey, all these other databases, and at first I thought I don't want to get away from it. But then when I started making calls too, and I see the problem is when you go, like, you can, my gal has been, when she calls them, they don't answer. She codes them as blue. Okay. But the only thing is you go through a day, and if you do enough calls, you can forget about these guys. Okay, how do I remember that this one guy said to call me back at 5 o'clock? You can make a note in there, but if you don't look back at 5
o'clock. No, you can create a task with a reminder that.
Oh, you can?
That'll ping you, yeah.
That's
the task manager.
That's probably good enough then. I just hadn't learned yet. So I like it.
Yeah,
I like
if
it.
If you think a task will do it, you can your gal can create a task that says, you know, remind me to call this person at so and so. Now what I think would be cool is, I believe it sends an email, and I'll ask the guys if there could be a little notification on the screen about a task that's coming due that day. But if you order your task from most recent, or if you go to your calendar, it'll show you the tasks for that day on the calendar with a timestamp on them. There's a little calendar feature in there, yeah. So
yeah,
play around
with
it a little bit more, and then. But yeah, anybody that has an idea like that, let us know. I mean, the developer works for us, so we basically say, hey, we want it to do this, and then we figure out how to make it work. So,
well, that's what I really like about ACT, is because it pops up on the screen all as they come up. Like, I hadn't looked at my – I've got it for another – a database for another thing that I was doing, and it pops up on the screen, hey, you need to call this guy at 2 o'clock, this guy at 2:30. And then you have to get rid of it. You either have to tell it, okay, I'll snooze it for a little while, or I'll go to that, and it takes you directly to it, which is it's just a handy deal. And for a guy, this guy, I'm really high on him, and if he does what I think he'll do, I'm going to let the other gal go because she's got, you know, I told her, give me 2 months if you can't, and she needs a lot of money.
Well,
and,
if this thing closes tomorrow, she's about to get paid.
Yeah, but it's not going to close tomorrow.
Okay.
It'll probably close. We're hoping it'll close by next Wednesday, because we got to find a mortgage company that may be out of business. So it's going to take.
She's going to know that this is serious. I mean, she's about to get a payday. So.
Well, and I pay her more than you guys. I'm way higher, but I'm doing it for a reason. We talked about it, and.
Yep.
But if she converted to where she can buy them, that's when she could really make the money.
Right.
If she could, actually do the deal entirely and keep me mostly out of it after a while, then she could make darn good money.
Right.
So, anyway.
Well, she'll have a decision to make because she's, you know, it sounds like her actions are saying this doesn't really work, but there's a deal about to go to the closing table. So we'll see what happens. But you're doing the right thing.
Yeah, we will.
You have to have somebody on the phone consistently, or else you're going to have deals and then no deals, and that's not acceptable. It takes consistent phone time to create deal flow, clearly.
What scares me, though, is giving everybody enough leads. I've got about 400 leads, but, man, you can go through leads like crazy.
You will.
And
you're going to need somebody. It depends on if you have one person or two on the sales side, but you're going to need a leads person. That's just paying attention to it. But this is, you know, and we've talked about Rob's setup a lot. They kind of run at a 15 to 25 deals on the board constantly, right? That ebbs and flows as things come and go. I was talking about a few weeks ago, the last time I asked Brad, they had 19 on the board. I asked him on a Wednesday. 3 of them were closing that Friday. And so they do it with 1 to 3 salespeople, based on who sticks, because that's right, turnover is a reality.
Yep. Yep.
One dispositions manager, they've gone through a couple already. When they're going through somebody, Brad steps in that role, and we've had that conversation as the owner. You're going to go through seasons where the team is in place and everybody's ticking, and then there's going to be some personnel changes. So you need to be able to wear every hat for a short period of time while you get somebody replaced. So they've got a new dispositions guy in a couple weeks ago. They have a leads manager, and then Brad's mom does transaction coordination. And check this out. It's pretty not super complicated. I'm not going to go into a whole lot of detail, but what they do a lot of times, because they want to build cash flow, so check out how cool this is. I mean, when you know how to generate leads and get deals under, right, we talk about this all the time. You can do whatever you want. So Rob and Brad are running a turnkey business model in Memphis. That's their primary city of focus. What they do when they go to sell the property, they find a buyer and they say, hey, let's throw this idea at you. Let's sell you the property. Then we want to lease it back from you, and then we're going to go sublease it. So they find the deal, wholesale it to their fix and flip company and get paid a wholesale fee. Then and they use private money to buy it. Then they use private money to fund the fix-up, and their company gets paid a construction management fee.
Oh, wow.
Now, this is – I don't want anybody implementing this or even thinking how to, but I want to show you, when you know how to generate leads and put a small team together, this is one of – this would be one of the options, right? So they get paid twice. Then they sell the property to a turnkey landlord. They get paid a third time. Then they put the lease agreement in place where they're going to lease it. If the property sits vacant, they don't make a full payment on it. They pay $150 a month until it's occupied. So there's incentive there for them to fill it. So they have, let's say they have a rental agreement at $650 a month. They're going to go rent it for $750 to $800. And now they made money on the transaction, and now they have a cash flow play long term. And they still bought the deal, wholesaled the deal, got paid, construction managed the deal, got paid, sold the deal to an end buyer, got paid, and now have cash flow on the back end. And the buyers love it because their lease is in place with two guys in a company that know what they're doing, which is Rob and Brad.
Yep.
So check that little creative thing out.
That's slick.
So the sky's the limit. Where does it all start? They know how to generate leads, and the sales team gets on the phone and has a conversation. That's where it all starts.
Yep.
So the sky's the limit when you – this is why we teach wholesaling first. It is not – wholesaling is not real estate 101. Wholesaling is the foundation that allows you to build just about whatever you want on top of.
You know, and that's
and
what
that's
known.
Why we stay there.
I've known for years, and then I deviated from it. And I, well, there was a reason, but I'll tell you why.
Time to come back.
It is, and I'm trying, man. I'm trying.
Oh, you've got it moving, Hal. So you've solved this sales piece. From there, start to have a conversation and figure out the constant lead flow piece and who you can have do that. Brad and Rob hired a college kid. Paid him to do it because that's not a full-time gig. Teach him how to post an ad for a bird dog, how to train up a bird dog real quick, you know, how to stay in touch and coordinate the VAs on the skip tracing and that kind of thing. That's not a full-time gig. That's a great little part-time deal for somebody. And but yeah, that's a good problem to have. It's great when you have a salesperson on board and you think, oh, crap, they're going to burn through these leads. I better figure this out. That's exactly where you want to go, right? We've been talking about good stress and bad stress. That's a good stress on the business that says, I got to kick lead gen into high gear here, because when you feed that sales machine, I mean, you're seeing the result. You've got a closing here in the next couple of days. Now, this thing would have been closed if it hadn't been for a couple unique title items, which is just a part of the business.
Yeah, it's part of it happens. Yep.
Title happens. We need a shirt made, right? It says title happens.
Yeah.
Title flaws happen. Something like that.
Yeah, they do. I missed our Monday night call, so I got to listen to it. So.
Sounds good.
I'm back.
It's posted. Yeah, good update. Looking forward to having this thing closed. Sounds like it'll happen next week.
Yeah, I think it will. I think it will.
And you're doing just right. Somebody newer that's listening thinking, oh, holy smokes, a title flaw comes up. What do I even do? Lean on your title company or your attorney. In Hal's case, in Georgia, they close with attorneys. Here in Colorado, we close with title companies. Let the experts do what the experts know how to do. They have a contract. They have a seller that wants to sell. There's a buyer in place. All the pieces are together. We've got a title issue. Lean on them. That's all they do is understand title, research title, know what's a problem and what's not. And how Title Gal said, don't sweat this. Might cost us a couple other days. Let's extend the contract until next week, but I'll get this taken care of for you. And that's, you don't have to be a title expert. Let the title experts be the title expert for you. Because they, what's cool about title, obviously, is they get paid when your transaction closes. So everybody's on this, right? They're on the same side of the table with you.
Yep.
No closing, no check for the title company. It's a beautiful thing. Let them be the experts. There was a title gal, and I've talked about him before, Shannon. When I ran acquisitions for Rob back in 2008, 2009, and 2010, Shannon just flat out understood what we were doing as investors. Shannon changed title companies. All of our business went to the new title company because it followed Shannon. Then I think Shannon had kids or whatever, something changed, got out of the business, start looking for another one. I was referred to a gal named Aaron here in town. I haven't closed I didn't close a transaction in Denver that didn't go to Aaron for title after Shannon.
It makes a difference who they are.
It's huge. It's huge.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Just let them do what they do and help out.
Yeah.
So. Good update, Hal. We'll be looking for hopefully you have some more info and a hard closing date for us on Monday.
I hope so.
Oh, yeah. We'll make it happen. Who else? Who's question? Pregunta para mí.
Should I be asking questions at this point, Mike?
Yeah, we'll handle that. So Tom sent a... He had this deal. The buyers flew out from Denver, wanted this property in Pittsburgh. Tom had photos of it, like 20 to 30 photos. The guys flew out there, bought plane tickets, and the place is destroyed. They're worried about falling through the floor. So I was talking to him prior to the call about, okay. So, you know, dial things in. We're buying distressed real estate. Some is distressed more than others. Clearly the seller didn't tell him the house is about to fall down. That's fairly normal. And then he sent out a bird dog that took, you know, 20 to 30 pictures. That's a lot better than two or three. Anyway, long story short, the buyer said, holy cow, that, you know, this thing needs a gallon of gas and a match. And so kind of a deflating day, but you know, I was talking to Tom prior to office hours. He didn't see that place in person. He sent over the photos that he had access to. These guys want and still want to buy in Pittsburgh, even though they live in Denver. And, you know, I told them, keep your foot on the gas, find them another deal, give them a discount on the next one. You know, if you feel partly responsible for the plane ticket, they're still going to make it a productive trip. They're driving around the city. One of them has a sister there or something like that. But, hey, stuff happens. I don't know how else to say it. That's another T-shirt. And I'm not talking about stuff, right? Things happen. Things don't always go smooth. This just happens to be one of those scenarios. And
This brings me back to pick it up.
And let's find another one.
This brings me back to being able to trust the trust what I'm doing from afar. You know, I mean, it's like, yeah, there's some buyers in Braddock, but there's not that many. I mean, it's that town is. It's not worth going after anything in that area. So
that's an easy one. If Braddock is a no, then generate leads in other parts of Pittsburgh. But I mean, you're in the middle of it, so you can let it shake your belief if you want to. But there's evidence all around that states otherwise on how you can live wherever you want and buy and sell wherever you want. So. Setbacks happen. Brad and Rob threw a dude in jail. In jail. In Memphis for stealing from him. I mean, the process they went through, I remember when Brad came out, because his mom, who helps him run operation out there, works in our office, and he came out and he said, I need three real estate. He was not happy. He said, I need three numbers of three real estate attorneys in Memphis to talk to right now. Can you find them for me? And so she went to work, and they got on the phone, and Brad flew out there, and the guy's still locked up. I mean, that's not an ideal day or scenario or situation by any stretch. So, Tom, you had some guys fly out, and they bought a plane ticket. They're going to drive around Pittsburgh. They're going to see some family. They're going to learn from it. You're going to learn from it. Ideally, you sell them another deal. And at least you didn't have to throw a guy in jail. And at least they didn't steal, you know, 20 grand from you. And that's the reason you locked him up. I tell you what, though, because I was kind of chuckling about this a few weeks ago when I was telling you guys the story. they had another contractor steal from him, and the fact that they threw contractor A in jail created a whole lot of leverage with contractor B, and he is now working off the amount that he stole. So from that standpoint, it worked out with contractor B, but they're not getting their money back that the guy in jail stole, you know, to the tune of, I don't remember the exact number, 15 grand. Might have been a little more. So that classifies as a major league headache. I mean, you don't certainly get in business hoping to, or ever thinking you're going to have to throw, you know, put a guy behind bars, but that's where it went. So that's what they did. Yeah.
What about the guy that stole my truck and $2,500 worth of my tools? He was a contractor.
Did you ever get it back?
I got the truck back. I got the truck back, but he abandoned it, and it was abandoned, and then I had to get it out of the tow lot, and the cops had it for, the cops knew about it for like 3 weeks before. It was a mess, but I don't think the cops down here, they don't want to put anybody in jail unless he's, I don't know, murderer maybe.
Yeah.
But at any rate, I got the truck back, and I got supposedly a warrant out for his arrest, but I don't even think it's valid, to be honest. I don't think the cops want to mess with it. But they
so
better
you,
hope
you
I never find it.
You've got the truck back, but you're out how much in tools?
$2,500, but he darn near ruined the truck because he left the windows down for a month and a half, and we had all this rain down here. Had leather seats in it. It was an old truck, but it was a good old truck.
But still, right. Nothing
yeah,
better than a good old truck.
Yeah, that's right. At any rate, I was just throwing that out there for the guys.
Yeah, things happen. That's
you
fun.
Got
that's
good guys and bad guys.
That's not even real estate specific. That's just...
No, it's not.
Specific.
Good
and
bad people.
Yeah. Things happen. You bump into knuckleheads and you send, you know... I mean, Tom, you clearly didn't intend to mislead anybody. You sent them photos and they bought tickets and it just didn't work out. So I get it. I'm not trying to make light of the situation, but I'm telling you, the sun's going to come up tomorrow. Everything about this still works. Forge ahead. This
no,
is,
I mean, yeah, okay.
What,
so
are you going to argue with me?
I'm going to say I use the rehab estimator to the best of my ability, and it was off by a factor of at least two, you know, maybe three.
If the house isn't ready to fall over, that number is accurate.
I'm just telling you what the contractor said, and they're both
I'm just
both
telling
contractors.
You that,
they know the
I'm
numbers.
I'm just telling you
they're
that we've tried that. We have put that thing to the test over and over and over again. So if you have a house that's borderline falling down, that's not what it's made to estimate. From what you're telling me, that they didn't want to walk on the second floor because the joists aren't even in place, that's a unique outlier scenario. I've been through a lot of houses, beat up, distressed real estate, and there's maybe one or two where I didn't want to walk upstairs. So... That's a small group, small percentage. But I have had a few where I didn't trust the second floor. So I know what it looks like.
I'm not doubting you, and I'm not. But I am curious, how often does this tool re-up itself, given inflation and stuff, say like Denver and stuff like that?
Yeah, it's really only an annual, because construction
annual
pricing moves around a little bit, but
yeah.
Construction pricing in Pittsburgh wouldn't have fixed this one. I mean,
no,
you have a house
no,
that's
just
about to fall over. Here's the thing. The seller should have been up front with you because you asked about condition, and I would think that you have every right to go back on a phone call and say, listen, man, why didn't you just tell me the house was about to fall over? And if you want to be frustrated, let that one go. Or, you know, make a phone call. At the end of the day, it's not going to fix anything. This happened. People flew out there. I'm telling you, get more deals queued up and say, you know, guys, I'll take care of you on this one. Let me get you one that works. I get it. You bought a plane ticket. Sounds like you got to see some family and everything worked out. But, you know, I feel, you know, you didn't mislead anything. But just say, hey, I had the deal that brought you out there. It didn't work out. I'm going to queue one up for you.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, everything's going to move on. And then these become stories that you chuckle about in a couple years. Like, you know, Rob will be at some family event and saying, hey, you know, how's Memphis? Oh, it's great. You know, after we threw the first contractor in jail. And then you kind of get a laugh about it. And, you know, things have been great ever since or, you know, whatever the case. It's one of those scenarios that the day of, it sucks to go through it. But at the end of the day, this will be a blip on the radar long term. So go find a deal for these buyers. They have money to queued up.
Yeah. Okay.
With my personality, I'm not recommending you do this, but when you have that next one ready, I'd call them and say, hey, I've got another one where the roof's about to fall in. Can you buy a plane ticket? And then just see what they say. And then tell them you're just kidding and then tell them about the real deal. But that's just if you have a twisted sense of humor. You can do something like that.
Well, I definitely need to get a better bird dog or property runner, whatever you want to call it, with somebody who's got a camera with a real flash, not just their phone.
Here's the thing, though. Right. So this is a little different scenario because your buyers are here local. So that makes a ton of sense. If you're going to sell to a buyer in Pittsburgh, you're just going to send them over. They're going to drive over. They're going to call you back 30 minutes later and be like, hey, Tom, I don't know what the seller told you about this thing, but the roof's about to fall in on this place. It's in really, really bad shape. And you guys kind of chuckle and you say, hey, thanks for taking a look. I'm going to get rid of the contract and I'll find you on the next one. This one is a little different because you had out-of-state buyers. So, yeah, you know, if that event comes up again, like I was telling you before, put a little thing on Craigslist to say I need a, you know, I'm looking to hire a former home inspector or a former contractor or a former builder and just say, you know, hey, I've got some things from time to time where I just need a professional set of eyes on a property. It'll take you less than an hour to drive there and walk through. I'm happy to pay you for it. And, you know, let me know. And you get somebody that, like I was telling you, you get somebody that's retired or working part-time, but they just have this background and they just know construction, and you send them over with a camera and or have them call you from the place and say, give me your honest feedback on it from somebody that knows construction. So it's an easy fix. You have a unique scenario here with out-of-state buyers. Tell you what, though, it's a great scenario to have out-of-state buyers because they won't carry all the local stereotypes that some of the Pittsburgh buyers will. So my recommendation is go find them a killer deal, tee one up, and say, you guys get first right of refusal on this. I'm going to go find you a winner. That's what I do because they're still interested.
I'm interested.
Yeah. This will turn into a win.
Thanks,
just
Mike.
Make it turn into a win, right? I mean, this isn't the last time you're going to screw something up, so be it.
Hey, Malik here.
Malik.
Hey, how's it going? Don't feel too bad, man. I kind of stepped in some of that stuff, too, so you're not the only one. You're not the only one dealing with these situations. I found a buyer. He wanted to inspect the property, and he told me it needed way more work than the seller let on. So he couldn't buy it at the price I wanted. So we're back at the negotiation table with me and the seller again.
How do you think that's going to go? Because I gave you my advice through email today. Make your new offer and find 10 more to make an offer on. How do you think
it'll
go?
I gave him a call. Couldn't get a hold of him. I'm going to try again after this call.
Okay.
It's going to be my final offer, and I'm going to tell him, you know, I really don't appreciate being misled. And, you know, this is what I do for a living. If it needs work, let me know, and we can work on something.
That's
but
right.
Don't lie to me and have my clients come to your property and find something is, you know, what you're telling me is not the truth. So, like a couple of weeks ago when I heard you guys say put the, you know, the responsibility and the guilt on him. That's exactly what I'm going to do.
Yep, and I'll tell you what, play it the right way. You can heap on as much as you feel like the situation deserves, but here's the other thing, Malik. Even if he says no, I'm assuming you have the seller's email address?
Yes.
Okay. Even if they say no, drop the contract, put the date on it about 48 hours out, sign it, create it in FreedomSoft, send it over, and say in the email, I know you told me no on the phone, but in case you change your mind, this is good for the next 48 hours, I'd still like to do business with you. And put that paperwork in front of them.
All right?
And if you want, you can even say for the next 20 I like to go 48 on that email. If you want to really force the issue, just because of what you think they did and sort of misled you, you can give them 24 if you want, kind of force their hand a little bit. But this is even if they say no, I'm just telling you, even if they say no in that conversation, put paperwork in front of them anyway.
All right. I'll definitely do that. And I'm definitely up for making that 10 more offers because, like you said, I'm not going to dwell on it. I'm going to move on to the next one. It's a numbers game.
It is. And it's really easy to get sucked in by this scenario. And so this is what I wanted, you know, I told you through the email. And I'm glad you chimed in here so everybody can hear it. But, you know, especially when we're getting started, we get one under contract and it gets close and then something like this happens. It can be so deflating. Right. In the future, you're always going to have multiple deals on the table. So these aren't going to take, very little, if any, wind out of your sail at all. And you're going to go back to a seller like this and you're going to say, listen, the market has spoken, got buyers through. This thing needs way more work than you told me it did. This is my new offer price. Does that number work for you? It's yes or no. And you don't, right? Just let them, they're either going to accept it or they're not. So what? If they do, great. If they don't, great. Move on and work with the people that are looking to sell at a number that everybody can win at.
Okay.
So, yep. Yeah, it's when it's the first deal or the only deal, it feels heavy. When it's one of 5, 10, 20, it's you won't even sweat it. And so we want to treat it that way because you want to practice the posture. So regardless of what happens with this scenario, practice the posture of this conversation because it's not the last one you're going to have. It says, this is what you told me. This is what we found out. This sales price or this purchase price doesn't work. I need to readjust it based on the condition of the property. Does that work for you? And you just throw it out there and like you don't care what they do. So no matter where this goes, it's a great experience.
All right. And also I had another question. If I have a bird dog and they send me a couple of properties, it's not listed but it's bank owned, do they get paid for those ones?
If it's not listed but it's bank owned, Rob wouldn't pay for it. He wants a vacant because here's the thing. It's bank owned but not listed.
Yes.
Here's the question. If they pull up to an address and they say, hey, this place looks vacant, and they snap a photo, is it their fault that it's bank owned? How would they know?
Right.
So I take that back. If there was evidence that this property doesn't fit what we're looking for, absolutely don't get paid. If that's something that you figured out through research and you determined that there's no way my bird dog could have known that this thing was bank owned, I'd go ahead and pay him for it. It's $3. Maybe you have a couple. It's $6. And just say, you know, here's what I found on these. There's no way you would have found out. I'm going to pay you for them. You know, appreciate the effort. If you've got somebody driving, you know, you're going to pay over time. You're going to pay for a handful of duplicates. You're going to pay for a couple that aren't vacant. Is it still worth it? Absolutely. If you've got a bird dog that's willing to drive and you overpay them a little bit, you know, so be it. You're going to win in the end. Now, if they're being flagrant about it and trying to take advantage of the system, you've got to cut it off or make a change. But that seems to me like I mean, how do you know if I drive up to a house and say, yeah, that's vacant? There's no way for me to tell who owns it.
Right.
So, what I think, yeah, just assess the situation and do what you think's fair.
Okay.
Yep. And at the end of the day, it's a $3 something per lead, right? So,
yeah.
Me personally, I would err on the side of my bird dog didn't know, I'm going to pay him for it. But you can assess everything that's going on, make the right choice there.
I'll go down that route. But if I keep getting bank-owned, then, you know, I'm going to have to pause on that.
Yeah, and I'm almost, yeah, keep tabs on it if it gets out of hand. Here's the thing, though. Even if you say, hey, you brought in 10 bank owns this week, how can they know? You might have to dig into it a little bit.
Okay.
There isn't a lead gen system out there that's perfect, and this is no different. Right? It's the best one that we know about and that Rob's been doing for the last 20 years, but it's not perfect because that doesn't exist. So, great questions. So, Malik, what else? What else you have? You've got a second one, don't you? That's queued up.
I had one. I had one that was a bulk, but he's not motivated because he owns about 100 plus properties in Ohio.
Yeah.
And he's not motivated. So I spoke to him about becoming a buyer, and he said he's interested in that. The properties that he wanted to sell, he said I had to buy three of them or none, but he wasn't motivated in moving it. I didn't like the price, and we couldn't come to an agreement. So you flipped him to a buyer. Yeah, I just flipped him to a buyer because he said, I own over 100 properties. I said, well, that's great, you know. I'm looking for a man like you.
Yeah, let me find you 10 more. I want to talk about this for a second and just make sure everybody understands what's going on. That's exactly what Malik should have done. We always lead when we're talking to people, always lead with the sell. Are you looking to sell? Are you looking to sell? And most of the time, we're talking to people that own one vacant, maybe a couple, but you are going to come across folks like this particular seller that the guy said he owns over 100 or over 150 properties. So he took it in the right direction. If they don't want to sell anything or they're not willing to let anything go at a good price, that's absolutely your next question. Hey, are you still buying? It looks like these prices aren't going to work out for me. Let me ask you this. Are you still buying? You own 150 now. Are you still growing the portfolio? And if so, put them right over on the other side of the business. Turn them into buyers. So well played.
Yep. So hopefully I can flip a lot of properties. Thing. He said he's always looking, so that's good to hear.
It's perfect. You need five. You need five people in your markets that make that comment right there. I'm always looking. I'm always buying. Got money. I'm always looking. That's it. I mean, you keep growing the buyers list because you just never know who else is out there, what kind of deals you can put together, that kind of thing. But at the end of the day, you have 3 to 5 people that say that make that statement. Say, I'm always looking. I can always close. You're off to the races. So you, I think you're still looking to get a salesperson in place, right? Or do you have one figured out now?
I have one, but I'm looking for a second one.
Are they making calls daily?
The one I have, he's not. I mean, in the beginning, he was allowed to talk, you know, salesperson talk. But now it's like dying down. I'm not getting what I need from him, so I'm looking for somebody else.
How many days has he been on the phone?
He's been on the phone from what I've tracked, probably a total of 6-7 days.
Okay. Do you know how many hours a day?
About 2 to 3.
And they have nothing to show for it?
Nothing that I know of, nope.
Yeah,
nothing at all. And it's taking them too long to navigate.
It shouldn't take that long.
It's taking them too long to navigate FreedomSoft. I keep showing him how to do things, and he just doesn't get it.
Yeah, not a good fit.
All right.
Not a good fit. Especially, I mean, it's the norm is to put somebody on the phones and have appointments set or deals under contract in 48 hours. It doesn't always happen that fast, but a lot of times it happens quicker than that. So, Yeah,
all right.
Got, you know, we've—it's not the first time I've said it on here, but you go a week and a half with a salesperson, you'll know if you need to keep them on board or not.
Okay.
So. Yep.
And also, what are your thoughts about? I've ran into a couple of—they call themselves professional wholesalers—and they have a website with like 50 properties that they're wholesaling. Is it a good idea to partner with them on some deals or just kind of leave them alone?
Good question. You know, hard to say, right? Professional wholesalers, is it one person driving good leads and then 10 other people putting them on their website for co-wholesale deals and that kind of thing? What I've watched Rob do over the years is go build a buyer's list of legitimate people with cash and not partner with other wholesalers in town. Now, if they get a hold of it and they call you up and they say, I've got a buyer ready to go right now, can I mark up your price? Absolutely. And let's figure out this one-off deal. But the better way is for you to go out, research the buyers. We know how to find them. We know how to find the ones that are legit. Reach out to them, get to know them, and sell them deals.
Okay.
Best way to do it.
All right, I'll keep doing that.
Yep. I mean, if buyers were hard to find and there was no such thing as public records and somebody in the market had the keys to the kingdom and knew everybody, that would change the story. But that's not the world we live in. So.
All right.
Yep. Good stuff, Malik. I told you I'm excited to record this testimonial with you. I know it's close.
Yep, I can't wait to do it.
Keep your foot on the gas. I know you will.
Definitely.
Any other questions real quick, or are we good?
We're good for now.
Okay. All right. Who else?
Hey, Mike, it's Ben.
Hey, Ben.
How's it going?
Good. How's the dentist?
Great.
Good. Good. Did you just go in for a cleaning?
Yeah. Yeah, no.
Yeah, I figured. I figured because... You said dentist at 4, hope to be on the call. I knew right away there was no root canal going on today. So.
Yeah, no, I'm good.
Cool. Yeah, good. Good
so
stuff.
You wanted me to talk. So I had that deal, deal. That I got under contract. I have it under contract to a buyer, so we're in good shape. But I had a... tax lien that I wasn't aware of pop up that so
yep.
I'm making a little less on the deal, but whatever. How
so here's the thing. You took it back to the seller. Did you tell them that this has to be covered from your proceeds, or did you ask them, or how did that conversation go?
No.
Yeah. Tell us how we got here, because I remembered that I had some input for it. Because I think you said you were covering taxes.
Yeah, so the seller initially agreed to take $3,200 for the house, which would have put, there's like 2,800 and some delinquent taxes, which would have put, you know, a few dollars in her pocket. And then after I sent her the contract, she said, by the way, there's this tax lien that I'm also having to pay. So she gave me the number for who to call on that. And I should have actually probably picked it up because the county records showed the delinquency, but it also says, like, tax lien sold. I assumed incorrectly. My assumption was incorrect that was in the 2,800 delinquency. It was on top of it, so it was another $1,500.
Gotcha.
So I got it under contract finally for the whole, basically, she's walking away with nothing.
So she's getting rid of a problem, not making anything. And then what did it do to, you had it marked up how much and then where are you at now?
So originally I was going to get it under contract. I thought for $3,200 I was going to sell it for $7, and I got it under contract for $44.50. And I still was selling it for $7.
Okay. So not a huge payday, but I was telling Ben, first remote wholesale transaction, obviously it's a major win. Let's not get hung up on the dollar amount. It's still a big deal. And then this is the part that I wanted to add in. When you all are having a conversation with a seller, and you've got to be asking you've got to be asking about the taxes, either you are or your salesperson. You have to build that into their script. You know, use a custom field in FreedomSoft with all the questions that you want answered so that as your salespeople are on the phone working the lead, they can just answer them all. And you have to have a question in there that says, are taxes current on the property? And so here's how this is going to work. So they come to you and they say, no, I owe $2,800. And you say, okay, here's the price. You start working on the numbers. You need to take that number specifically and put it on the contract that says buyer to pay $2,800 in back taxes. Now, if you go through title and you figure out that there's more owed, you're only on the hook for $2,800, and that was their number that they told you, right? Because this can happen. If you put it on the contract that says buyer to pay back taxes, that could be a mess if you come back and the title search reveals that there's another $10,000 owed. Don't ever put an open-ended. Now, again, I mean, here's what's funny is Ben's the attorney. I'm not. This is not legal advice. But what we do, what I can tell you is what we do. When we're in a negotiation like that and they say, you know, I owe X amount of back taxes and we agree to pay it, that number goes on the contract, that specific number, not an open-ended statement about buyer to pay all back taxes. That could be dangerous. Now you're and Ben, you could probably speak to this because you are a licensed attorney, but now you're under contract with open-ended verbiage that says all back taxes, and you're contractually liable to perform based on that contract, right?
Right. No, and I wouldn't do that. And what I did was the opposite.
I know you would
put on there.
I'm talking about.
No,
else.
I wouldn't.
Your
advice is, I say, is good advice. You know, if you're going to pay the back taxes, put the amount definitely.
Right.
What I did was I did the opposite. I put seller shall pay all delinquent taxes, etc.
And then
like,
because
I
of
didn't
the purchase
say et cetera,
price,
but
gotcha. So then because of the purchase price, I mean, it was only $3,500 to start with, and then the new findings, she would have to bring money to the table, and she said that's not an option. Is that how this got
right.
here?
Right. Right.
Okay.
She said she couldn't
okay.
do that.
Gotcha.
So I said, okay, fine.
Hey, and this, I tell you what, when you're tying stuff up, this is why you want to miss, you know, this is why you negotiate good pricing, because when surprises like this come into play, on this one, you had enough room. Now, it's not like you're going to, you know, get rich or retire off this closing, but you had enough room built into the deal where this $1,500 surprise showed up. The seller basically said, I don't have it. What do you want to do? And so then you have a choice. I'll cover it. You know, the other option was to walk away, but since you had enough cushion in there, you can cover it and still get paid. And so that, you know, this kind of stuff happens. It's just the reality of it. This is why, you know, you want your average. It depends on the market and that kind of thing, but if you can average $7,500 on a transaction, you're going to be a whole lot better off than if you're trying to make five. If you want to make five, build in $7,500 in margin, because things are going to show up. It's just part of the business. So what's closing date on this thing, Ben?
I don't have the date yet. It's hopefully by the 23rd.
Okay, so it's on or before the 23rd.
Yeah.
Awesome. And then let's go to what else do you guys have in the works? I know you've been working on a salesperson. I think they're on the phone this week, right?
They've been on the phone for 2 weeks probably.
Okay, and nothing to show for
you
yet?
Well, no, she got this one.
Okay.
There were three other potential deals where there was seller interest.
Okay.
One owner who has two of the houses. he's a guy who's in bankruptcy.
Okay.
Owes a ton of back taxes on not just those two properties, but his personal residence, and that's why he declared bankruptcy. He's kind of on the fence, like us. So I've talked to him every, I don't know, 3 days or to a week. I've been talking to him to try to convince him.
With what he owes in back taxes, could the numbers on the deal still work?
With what he owes in taxes? Oh, yeah. He wants more than that, though. Like, he's a...
Gotcha.
He's like a... basically a part-time fix and flipper. He said he's done a lot of work to these things. I'm trying to get him just to shoot me some pictures to verify what he's saying is right.
Right.
And then I was going to make him an offer, but... you know, he, like, wants 20 and 25 on houses that are worth 50 and maybe 60.
Okay, and still need some work.
Yeah, and it's sounding like 15 to 20 in work for each one, so that's...
What do they rent for? Let's run numbers on one of these.
Yeah, well, one would probably 750. 7 and 750, probably one of them is a little better neighborhood.
And he'll sell you, let's just pick one of them. What will he sell it to you for that he says?
Well, I'll tell you, the numbers will work with the rentals, but I'm having a bit of my buyers, the ones that are actually like wanting to pull the trigger are flippers.
Gotcha. So this is a function of who you can move it to.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
So I haven't had like the one that under contract to sell is with a flipper. It would be a great rental. It's pretty small, but still.
Here's what I want you and your brother to do. If these don't work as flips, they're definitely landlords buying in town. So hit up every property manager. Just go do a Google search for, you know, landlords in your market. See if you can find them online. Check Facebook groups, local RIAs. And say who are the biggest landlords in town. Call every title. Just Google search the title companies, and say, do you guys work? Do you have any closers there that work with landlord investors? I'm trying to identify the tops in town. I've got a couple great little rentals that are about to be under contract, and you know I'm just looking. Can you connect me with them? So go to the places and find the landlord buyers, because every major market has. You know, Malik was just talking about this guy that he's talking to. He flipped over into a buyer, owns 150, and he's always looking. That guy is one of many who own that many in town, right, in Malik's market in Ohio. And that landlord is in every market across the country. So it's just a matter of finding them. And if you've got a couple, it sounds like these deals work as rentals, let's just go find a rental buyer real quick. So go to the usual place.
You know, I've been talking to, I got a list of like 8 property management companies that I've been calling.
Yeah.
And when I asked them like if I could send, do they have a list of people that are looking at properties, or if I could send them to them, they're all telling me they refer people out to realtors, and then they'll give me the name of the realtor.
Yep. That's perfect. I was just going to say. Call that agent.
Except, I'm also in Ohio, and Ohio's that state where the real estate commission doesn't like wholesalers.
Correct.
So it's a little bit touchy on that. And so I wanted to actually have a question to follow up on Malik's question about the Nash, you know, the professional wholesaler guys.
Yeah.
So one of these property management companies gave me the name of this guy. Who's a wholesaler, who's a realtor. And it occurred to me maybe it would be good, I haven't talked to him yet, to maybe discuss turning him kind of into a disposition kind of person, like forming some sort of partnership where he got a percentage of my deals and let him move them to his list of buyers. On some of
Here's
these?
The thing.
I don't know what...
Yeah, if you're gonna give something up like that, you better be getting a dispositions person with a big old list where you can move them without much headache, and they feel like they can move the majority of it. Here's the thing: regardless of what the real estate commission thinks or says or wants to happen, you can still wholesale as long as you disclose and everything's above board. So,
right,
wholesaling is alive and well in Ohio. Just play by the rules. If you're not a buyer, don't say you're a buyer. If you don't have a property for sale because you don't own it yet, don't say you have a property for sale. Say you have a contract. Just be above board on what you're saying, right? The intent and capacity words come into play, which is one of the training videos in the coaching center where Rob talks about what was your original intent and did you disclose it? And do you have the capacity to do what you said you were going to do based on your original intent, right? Now, again, we're not attorneys, so this is stuff that all of you can research and know about. But at the end of the day, if you're going to give up something, you've got to get something. That's negotiation 101. If you're going to give up profit on your deals to somebody, and with a dispositions person, you typically do anyway, but dispositions is easier than sales, especially long-term, right? So Rob and Brad brought a new dispositions guy in. They already have a buyer's list in place. They're already moving 15 to 20 some odd deals a month. They already have repeat buyers. So the new dispositions guy plugs in, sends out a couple emails, gets on the phone, and then later on that day, because I'm on their list, you know, it says 123 Main Street's under contract. So that part of the business, as your buyer's list gets more established and as you have repeat buyers, dispositions becomes an easy way to make money. Now, somebody has to do it. Somebody has to send the email. But here's what I don't want you to give up. You know how to generate the leads, and that's the goose that lays the golden eggs here. Right?
Right.
It's all about the good leads. Dispositions up front can be more challenging, but I'm saying over the long haul, rule of thumb, you're going to pay salespeople more money than dispositions people as your team grows because dispositions is easier.
Okay.
So just keep that in mind, right? I'm okay. Like Quinn and Josh, they found a guy like this in their market, and he's been investing in that city for 40 years. And he says, I know all the players in town. Bring your deals over, and I'll get them moved. And he's got some moved for them. So I'm all for it. If it makes sense, but just understand that you knowing how to generate these leads, you own the goose that lays the golden egg.
Okay.
So you don't need them. If they make your life easier, fantastic. If they leverage the money you can make there, fantastic, but don't give up too much. That's all I'm saying.
Good tip.
It's all about the lead and you control that. That's where the magic happens. I say easy in quotes, right? It's fairly easy to move a great deal. The challenge is in where to look, how to negotiate it, how to get the good numbers tied up, how to know what to offer, how to know what a great deal is in that neighborhood. That's the expertise side. So, but yeah, if it's a strategic partnership and it makes sense and it's leverageable, I'd say seriously consider. Just don't give up too much.
All right. Appreciate it.
Yeah. A lot of good stuff happening. Great update. Keep us posted next week. Hopefully you get what are you waiting for on in order to get a hard closing date on this transaction?
Just the title company to get the lien payoff on the taxes.
Okay. So they're waiting on a government entity to get an official payoff.
It just got to the title company. The seller just sent the lien release she needed yesterday. So that's
gotcha. So they're just waiting on signatures and paperwork and stuff. Cool.
Correct.
All right. It sounds like everybody's in place, right? The end buyer's ready to go. Money in hand.
Earnest money's in. Yep.
Okay. So this thing ought to be able to. This thing ought to be able to go.
Close.
You get the payoff. It ought to be 48 hours from that, something like that.
I would think.
Cool. All right. Good stuff. Good stuff. Anything else,
Ben?
Good update. I love it.
No, just I guess I'll, you were asking about my salesperson. She's been making calls. I got a second one that's, I think, ready to go, but I need more leads. So we're launching in a second market now. My brother's calling some bird dogs tomorrow.
Cool. That's the thing is, once you open up one remote market to go 2, 3, 4, 10, whatever you want, it's just, it's so no-brainer when you've gone through this program. And that's the goal. Markets are going to change. Now, it's not like you can't, right? You could go into a market like some of the big old, you know, Pittsburgh, you know, the Ohio markets, whatever, these big old markets. You can buy and sell there for as long as you want. You can also, you guys may go in and out of some of the trendier markets based on the, you know, what the markets are doing. Like Denver, well, I'm telling you, when this thing crashes again, you want to buy in Denver, Seattle, Portland. That's where you want to go. You know, Rob's not, he taught it through his book and he's taught it from stage and he's using these other markets now to build network, obviously make money, but build network, meet private lenders, and get some things in place so that when this crashes again, he's going to go all in Denver. Pricing in a market like Denver, these trendier markets where the, you know, the housing prices go way up and then they just crash. And he's going to buy at the bottom, rent those houses for 6 to 8 years, sell at the next peak, and that's all done money. That's his... what he feels like is a legitimate $30 million mistake during the last crash. He's been open about it. You know, like I said, talked about it from stage, talked about it in emails. It's not like he hides it. He took that $10 million we had. We bought houses, fixed them up, and sold them retail. We put a fix-and-flip business model in place, whereas if he would have bought them, did a little bit of rehab, rented them, and then sold them here now, you know, now or within the last 24 months, they would have tripled, maybe even quadrupled that $10 million and made cash flow, really good cash flow on all the rentals for the last 8 years. So, yeah, he learned. And he actually had a guy tell him what to do. And then he went a different way. And he's been open about that, too. He had lunch with a guy that was a you know, some of you maybe heard this story, but he was a wholesaler first, and then he became a hard money lender, just lending out his own money. And he and Rob had lunch, and Rob laid out his game plan, and he shook his head, and he said, that's not what you do. He said, go spend every cent of that $10 million, winterize the houses, board them up, wait 8 years, and sell them. And, he was making a point. What you would really do is rent them for the 8 years, but he was saying what you could do and still make a killing is winterize the house, shut off utilities, and pay upkeep on the lawn so you don't get fined from the city. Board them up, let them sit, and then sell them in a market like now. So, long answer to, if you get in and out of some of the trendier markets, you'll be able to just say, hey, I see some opportunity over here. Let's fire it up. And you'll be up and running, leads coming in within a week, within, 5 to 7 business days. So, yeah, nice job, you guys, getting that second one in place. Good stuff.
Thanks, Mike. That's
good
all for me.
Good stuff. Great update. Yep. Who else?
Stan.
Hey, Stan.
How are you?
Good. How are you doing?
Good, thank you.
Good, good.
So, Mike, I should use that vacant list or just do it?
Nope, I want you to stay focused. I want you to stay focused. Vacant lists are okay in addition to bird dog leads, but your bird dog leads are going to be better than a list. And, Hussein, that's the same list that we pipe into FreedomSoft. It's the U.S. Postal Service vacant leads list. And, there are deals in there, but having bird dogs go and put eyes on a house and say, that is a vacant house, and send that lead and skip trace it and call it, it'll be a better lead because the Postal Service data is not 100% accurate.
Okay.
And I know that because we have access to it.
Right.
So we've looked at it. It's the Postal Service vacant house feed, and they have thousands and thousands and thousands of houses in there that are owner occupied. So whatever the delay is between whether it's mail backing up or whatever, however the Postal Service is categorizing these houses as vacant, it is not 100% accurate. So you'll still generate better leads with a bird dog driving around physically putting eyes on property. The best way to do it. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Makes sense. Thank you.
Yep, you're welcome. Any other questions?
No, that's funny.
Okay. If something else comes up before we're done, let me know.
Yeah, I'm listening.
Yeah, good stuff. Way to just chime in. Man, that's fine, everybody. If you don't have a question, that's fine. Just show up. Be on the call. You got to hear other students' challenges. You've got to hear their wins. If you're listening in, that's fantastic. I encourage you to make as many office hours calls as you can. So who else?
Mike, it's Larry.
Hey, Larry.
So I got some bird dogs, but they're not. I even offered them and sent them more money, but I've got a total of 39 properties. So we got more coming. So that's going kind of slow. But the ones that are coming in, I have IntelliS myself, so I just skip tracing those myself for now because I don't want to get a salesperson yet until I get something generated so they're not sitting around.
Yeah, if you're going to long-term, clearly, don't be skip tracing. Don't be making all the sales calls, but I'm all for it short-term because you're going to get good at it. You'll know how to train it. It'll be more effective there. So, yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, Larry, you've got phone numbers to call. If you're the one now that jumps on the phone, let's get a deal under contract and tell while you're working on some other pieces. So, stay on the bird dogs. I get it, right? Sometimes, and this happens occasionally, where you just talk to 10 people, 20 people, and you just think, what in the heck? Why isn't this working? Stay on it. All it takes is one to go nuts, and you'll have a boatload of leads. So it happens from time to time. We can't predict, which students are going to run into a bird dog challenge. Stay with it. I've coached a lot of people through it. Don't give up. Keep talking to people. Keep your ad posted. And you'll find one or two that are hungry and that'll go do it. And you'll go from 39 leads to 500 inside of a week. I've seen it happen over and over again. So stick with it.
Perfect. Yeah, no, I'm not getting discouraged at all. But
good.
Able to wholesale a house in my own backyard here. So just got
that.
Where did
the lead come from?
Actually, I advertise in my local newspaper out here, and that I buy houses, and somebody called me, and we made a deal. So,
love it. What'd you make on it?
That was only gonna be $3,500.
Hey, that works. How'd you find the buyer?
I already know because I'm in my local area. I know a lot of the cash buyers out here.
I've known them for a while.
That's why I'm with you guys learning how to do it remotely because I can do things in my own backyard. I just don't know how to do it somewhere else. So.
Yeah, it just opens up the door. I mean, clearly, if you can wholesale remote, you can wholesale in your own city. Obviously, right? So, yeah, this is a key skill. I mean, it really opens up. And here's the thing: is I don't know of another person like Rob that teaches it. Maybe there is somewhere, but for the majority, most the coaching programs we know about are. How do you make money in your own backyard? And we'll fly somebody in, and they'll drive you around for a little bit. And man, it's just so much easier to go elsewhere. Especially, some of you live in great markets, but some of you live in Denver. I'm telling you what, you want to fire up a wholesaling operation in Denver in this market? Get your checkbook out, try and get some leads generated. I mean, you're going to spend a boatload.
So, yeah, that's kind of like how it is in my own backyard. It's in Reno, Nevada area. And things are just houses are going up like crazy. As soon as they go on the market, people are paying $5,000 or $10,000 over what they're asking now. So they're getting back to that stage again. So most people know what they're sitting on. A few people just don't want to deal with the MLS or realtor. So that's what the wholesaler.
Hey, cool
in,
way to Way to keep that line in the water.
So,
just never know.
No, you don't know. And another one, I just knew a lead where I, you know, was high priced house, but I gave a lead to somebody else, and he gave me $1,000 for the lead, so because he bought the house.
Cool. That's good stuff. Yeah, you'll get these lower price markets when this thing gets moving. I mean, you would have to work really, 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 really hard and spend a ton of money to try and do 5 deals a month in Denver. And, you know, Rob and Brad, now clearly this is the system Rob teaches. He's done it over and over again. But, I mean, you all get to know the system through the program here. They were doing north of 15 a month just within a couple months in Memphis. And you can't do that here. Not for the – I mean, you would have to spend 10 times the marketing budget to try and figure that out. And you still might not be able to do it in Denver. I mean, to generate a lead for – it's $3 to the bird dog. And then a VA that's doing the skip tracing with any kind of speed, I mean, even if they're slow, you tack on another $2 and you've got a $5 – vacant lead. I mean, that's a lot of bang for your buck when it comes to lead gen. And these are the best leads you can generate. I mean, a vacant house from a percentage standpoint, highest likelihood that the seller needs to get rid of it for $5 a lead. That's crazy. That's just super cheap. If anybody's wondering, that's very cheap.
Now, is Hal still on the phone? He's from Atlanta, right?
Who?
Hal?
I don't know if he's still on. Yeah, he lives in Atlanta. And he has a place in Denver here, too, but I think he's most time in Atlanta.
Yeah, if he's on, I need to get his number because I have a lady in Reno that she buys in Atlanta, so she's looking for a wholesaler. So.
Hal, are you still on?
Yeah, I'm still here.
Larry's got a buyer for you.
Would you like me to give you – yeah, give me your number or however you want to do it, or email it to me somehow. I don't know. Unless you just want to give it to me with no.
Yeah, I can give it on now. Nobody cares.
Yeah, we don't care, Hal.
All right, 303. It's a Denver number, 328-1903.
Okay. Yeah, I'm going to give it to some lady, Chris Kelly. She buys out in the Atlanta area.
Okay,
but
that's
she's
great.
Here. So,
Larry, is she buying rentals or flips, fix and flips?
Flips. Well, she's doing fix and flips now out there in the Atlanta area.
Great.
So
yeah,
Hal can talk that language all day long.
Yeah, they can talk together. So, and hopefully she can help him out a little bit.
See how this works? Well, I'm telling you, everybody else, especially in this group, buy from, sell to, partner with.
Yep, that's what it's all about.
You know what? What else you got? This is just the reality. Step on it now. I know that's why you all came to this group, right? Nobody here is just looking to, you know, waste time and putz around, but step on it now because when this thing crashes, nobody has a crystal ball, but also nobody would be surprised if it's in the next 24 months. The wholesalers who don't have a clue, who showed up at a weekend seminar, they don't know how to evaluate deals. They have no idea how to generate a good lead. They don't know how to price a deal. They don't know how to sell a deal that has any money on it for the end buyer. They just don't know what they're doing. They're all going to disappear. And so legitimate buyers, when people run from real estate, that's when the big money is going to get hungrier than ever. Right? I mean, this is Warren Buffett 101. What does he say? When there's fear in the streets, be greedy. When there's greed in the streets, be fearful. Is that how he says it? Basically, when everybody's running out of real estate, that's when you want to buy. Right now, we sit in a market where everybody wants to buy real estate. And so it's not that we don't. We just buy a different, right? We go to the lower priced markets, get involved in deals there. You know, you can still make money in real estate. Clearly, this is a great time to be buying. But what I'm saying is you're going to know how to generate great leads, and the big money is going to have an incredible appetite when this thing crashes. An incredible appetite. And so are the, you know, the single investors, that's just the high net worth individuals. They are going to be all in real estate. And they're going to be looking for, right, the trendier markets across the country is where they're going to want to buy. So there's no reason you shouldn't feed them or start buying some on your own. So telling you, this is when you build market share right now. Establish yourself now, and then with the buyers, and then when all of the fly-by-night don't really know what they're doing, wholesalers and investors disappear, there will be very few of us left compared to, I mean, there's still going to be a lot of people that are competent and get it, but compared to how many are calling themselves investors today, it'll be a small percentage of people that remain. So just telling you, now's the time. Now is the time. Couldn't be in a better spot to get this figured out and dialed. Who else? Is that a wrap? All right. Great calls, everybody. As always, it's a great group to work with. I just so you all know, I really enjoy it. I look forward to these calls every week with this group. So a lot of good stuff happening. I just think these are fun conversations. I love hearing the, you know, the trials and the wins. That's what it's about. That's what life's about. To think that this business would be otherwise, you know, we'd all be kidding ourselves. Things are coming your way. If you're in a season where, you know, blue skies and in clouds, you know, we're not going to be doomsday about it, but get ready for salespeople to disappear or, you know, something to happen with a team member, this or that, or life to throw your wrench. It's part of it. It's part of how it works. So talk through it. We persevere, we press on. And, anyway, yeah, I thank you all for showing up because this is a great group to work with. So I really enjoy it. Any other questions? From now to Thursday, get them into the coaching center. We want questions to come in immediately when you have them so that we can get solutions in place and keep you moving forward. So great stuff as always. Everybody take care. Have a great afternoon or evening, wherever you're at, and we'll chat soon.
Thanks, Mike.
Thanks, Mike.
Take care, buddy.
Yep, see ya.